Welcome to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Monday, July 10, 2023. President Salva Kiir tells South Sudanese to stay at home and reflect on South Sudan's journey to independence.
Monday, July 10 will be a public holiday also. Please take your time to enjoy Monday with your families. Once again, I congratulate you on the occasion of our 12th anniversary of independence.
And the head of the Anglican Church in South Sudan calls on the leaders of the country to implement tasks in the roadmap.
It is unfortunate that the roof of our sovereignty is still leaking. We therefore pray and request all of us to double our efforts in mending the leaking roof through commitment to the roadmap.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. President Salva Kiir addressed the nation Saturday, promising to take the country to elections in 2024. Mr. Kiir acknowledged that numerous challenges facing the country. He promised that his government will soon buy food to address the growing food insecurity across the country. For VOA News, Juliana Shiapai reports from Juba.
President Kiir called on the international community to help his government address the plight of refugees and returnees fleeing the conflict in Sudan. In his speech delivered on Saturday, July 8, 2023, from his residence in Juba, he urged South Sudanese to stay at home and reflect on the country's journey to independence.
Monday, July 10th, will be a public holiday also. Please take your time to enjoy Monday with your families. Once again, I congratulate you on the occasion of our 12th anniversary of independence and wish you all the best as you peacefully celebrate this important holiday. May the Almighty God bless you and our country, the Republic of South Sudan. Long live South Sudan.
Some analysts recently said South Sudanese are yet to enjoy some dividends of independence after 21 years of bitter conflict with Sudan. They say the past 12 years have been characterized by political and intercommunal violence, economic hurdles, corruption, poverty, and diseases. South Sudan Minister of Peacebuilding acknowledged the crisis facing people in South Sudan. Stephen Parkall says the government of South Sudan is working to address some of the challenges facing the country.
Based on the current situation, we know that our people are celebrating this independent day in refugee camps, in rural areas, in hardship. As things stand now, as a government, we work to make the next independent day more enjoyable, more better than this. It can be better, but we did it depending on the condition of our people, the economic crisis we are going through, the hardship that is also compounded by the crisis in the Sudan. But our people are happy. This is a day you cannot miss to celebrate.
Some South Sudanese on the social media complain about the inability of the government of South Sudan to organize official celebration on July 9th. But Minister Kuol urged South Sudanese to remain patient as the government focuses on stabilizing the country through peace efforts.
Well, I think the condition, the economic conditions are very clear to all our citizens. We have other priorities more pressing than holding big celebration, popular celebration like we do. You know, the humanitarian crisis in northern part of our country now. You know, the economic crisis the country going through. We have celebrated in a way. You must have read the speech of our president. And the theme is consolidating peace in our country. That is focus. If we have resources, we put them to peace implementation and the rehabilitation of our communities, humanitarian response that you have seen in northern South Sudan, and so on and so forth.
Many residents of Juba hanged the South Sudan flag and pictures of President Kiir on many vehicles and motorbikes as the country marks the 12th anniversary of South Sudan independence from Sudan. The country declared its independence on July 9, 2011, after a referendum where 98% of South Sudanese voted for separation from Sudan. For VOA News, I am Juliana Shapai in Juba.
As South Sudanese celebrate the 12th independence anniversary, some senior religious leaders in Juba are calling on the country's leadership to address challenges facing people of South Sudan. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wudu reports from the capital, Juba.
Archbishop Justin Badi Arama congratulated the South Sudanese on the occasion of the country's 12th independence anniversary and urged the leadership of South Sudan to do more by achieving the wishes of the citizens.
This day marks a significant milestone in our history, reminding us of the struggles and sacrifices made by our fathers, brothers and sisters to secure our freedom and sovereignty.
Arama says several challenges ranging from instability and economic hardship have tainted the hope for a brighter future in South Sudan.
It is unfortunate that the roof of our sovereignty is still leaking. We therefore pray and request all of us to double our efforts in mending the leaking roof through commitment to the roadmap for peace implementation and minimizing hate and violence. Let us use our freedom as a tool for a life of exuberant service to our nation.
Catholic bishops recently issued a statement in Juba where they raised concerns over several challenges ranging from insecurity, economic hardships, and a humanitarian crisis in South Sudan. Stephen Ameyo, Cardinal Designate and the Archbishop of the Metropolitan Catholic Archdiocese of Juba, called on the country's leaders to address the challenges facing the country. Ameyo said parts of Western Bahr El Ghazal, Upper Nile, Central Equatoria, and Eastern Equatorial states continue to experience pockets of violence.
There are these unknown gunmen who are roaming over the country, killing anybody that they meet and robbing anyone. Even recently in Jongole, the UN or UNDP house warehouse was looted. That is all the forms of violence. And that is what we want to say. Enough is enough. The government should look at this problem.
Michael Makwe is the South Sudan Minister of Information and the government spokesperson. He admits South Sudan experienced serious problems over the past 12 years. He says the government of South Sudan is working on efforts to mitigate the challenges.
There are challenges, and this is why now we are in the implementation of the agreement. Otherwise, if there had been no challenges, there would have been nothing called the agreement. And because there were challenges, this is why we had to look for an agreement, and this agreement is what we are implementing now.
President Salva Kiir admitted in his address, marking the 12th independence anniversary, that the country is facing several challenges. Kiir says his government is putting more efforts to ensure the country conducts elections in 2024. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu reporting from the capital, Juba.
From Juba, we move to Rumbek, where the United Nations mission in South Sudan pledged over the weekend to support the transitional government of national unity through peace activities in Lake State. The mission's field coordinator in Lake State assured the state government of UN's readiness to help South Sudan achieve a permanent peace across the country. William Sande Mabor reports from Lake State capital, Rumbek.
Addressing a gathering in Rumbek to mark South Sudan's 12th independence anniversary in Rumbek over the weekend, ANMIS acting head of field office in Lake State says her office is available to support peace activities in Lake State. Caroline Opoko encouraged the state government to partner with ANMIS for the realization of the permanent peace and development in the state.
We are going to work with you and walk along with you on the current roadmap. I think you can trust us to work with you and support you because this is the original aim for this independence.
Opoku praised Lagos State Government for its commitment to peace and tranquility. She called on the South Sudanese to remember the reason for the country's struggle for independence. She says there is a lot of goodwill from the South Sudanese, the international community, and the United Nations mission in South Sudan to support the country's challenges of achieving peace and development.
I can promise that the United Nations is also with you in this goodwill. Therefore, what I can say is that you can rely on us to walk with you on this journey.
General Rinpei Mabor is the Lagos State Governor. He says his government has taken a step to unite and reconcile the people of Lagos State. He acknowledges that South Sudan is facing political and economic challenges, adding that the national government is determined to address the barriers hindering stability.
We have taken the steps towards nation building, fostering unity and diversity, and promoting reconciliation and peaceful coexistence among our people. We have faced political, social, and economic hurdles that have tested instability, but through it all, we have remained resilient, and our commitment to achieving lasting peace and prosperity has never wavered.
The head of the United Nations mission in South Sudan, Nicholas Haysom, says the United Nations remains committed to working with the South Sudanese as well as regional and international partners to achieve sustainable peace and stability in South Sudan. Haysom says South Sudan is facing critical movement as it implements the 2018 peace agreement. He called on the South Sudan leaders to consolidate the country's independence by creating a renewed social contract and establish the required political and civic space for citizens to participate in democratic elections scheduled in 2024. For VOA News, I am William Sande Mabor, reporting in Rumbek, Lagos State.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, four people were killed in Jonglei State. Find out why after the break. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Authorities in Jonglei State have launched an investigation into the cause of a motorboat accident which left at least four women dead along the River Nile over the weekend. Elizabeth Nyagdak is the Jonglei State Information Minister. She says the commuter boat was on its way from Juba to Fangak County when it caught fire and sank near Fangak. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Juba.
Butrus Biel, the Fangak County Commissioner, says a commuter boat carrying passengers from Juba to Fangak caught fire and later sank near Fangak on Saturday morning.
The boat capsized between Tunja and New Fangak, Tunja Town and New Fangak Town. Three women died and then one girl and the rest survived, including a baby of 3 months old. We are trying to find out what actually caused the driver. And the rest of and the boat and the crew, they are under investigation in New Fangak to find exactly what they did. Was it automatic or something was wrong as a human negligence? So we are trying to find out.
Commissioner Biel urges families of the deceased to remain calm as the authorities investigate the cause of the incident. He says county authorities are holding the boat driver and some of the crew members for further investigations.
We pay actual our condolences to the family. It's very sad because the child that lost the mother 3 months. This is a very sad situation, and we stand with the family to pay our condolences, and we do the best we can. But I think this also gives us the scenario of working hard to ensure that we coordinate with our counterpart in other counties that the boat safety must be very important.
Elizabeth Nyadak is the Minister of Information in Jonglei State. She says state authorities were shocked by the incident, which she describes as tragic.
And those four people, they are from one family. This is very sad news to the whole Jonglei State. It is very sad news.
I understand. Because the sailors, sometimes they feel cold. Some of them may take a cigar to warm themselves up. Please, whenever you want to take the cigar, don't take it near the engine. because most of the cases are from the fire. The boat got burned and the boat. Let them not be careless. Let them be very careful on that. This is what I can tell them.
Lija Thongbor, the Secretary General of the Boat Trade Union in Jonglei State, says motorboat accidents have become common in recent months. Thongbor says at least four people were injured when a boat carrying UN relief food caught fire at a port in Bo Town on Saturday.
We are talking with our drivers to take care of it because this one is very dangerous. Because something which is very easy, when something happens and you go and help the boat or help the item which is in the boat, it could be better. But this one, there is no way that you can. When the fire is open at one, that is all. There is no any help. Unless you have a distinguished, that is where you can help the boat. But when there is no distinguished, you cannot.
In 2014, more than 200 women and children drowned when their overloaded boat capsized on the Nile as they scrambled to escape fighting in Malakal. For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng in Juba.
From Juba, we move to Sudan, where citizens have mixed reaction to the call by the military leader, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, for young people to take up arms against the paramilitary rapid support forces. While some see it as defending their country, others worry that more recruitment might extend the conflict. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Juba.
As Sudan's conflict enters the third month of fighting, the Sudanese military leader has reiterated his call for young people to take up arms against the paramilitary rapid support forces, or RSF. Some citizens see the call as national duty. People have the right to take up arms so they are able to defend themselves and their country, said Abdulaziz Ishaq, a Sudanese citizen in Khartoum. Ishaq told VOA he has encouraged his 32-year-old son, Muhammad, to join the army and contribute to defending the country. He says Al-Burhan's call is overdue. He says citizens must stand together to defend it. And while establishment of a civilian government remains valid, right now all must stand alongside the military to defend the country. The United Nations said at least 3,000 people have been killed and 2.8 million people have been displaced. Khadija Mu'tez, a 35-year-old mother of three boys and two girls, says the call to arms will place more young people in harm's way and they will not be well trained. Mu'tez says this means we are going to witness growing numbers of orphans and widows across the country. And women will be the ones taking the burden of all the responsibilities. This week, a Sudanese military official showed some video of dozens of people in civilian clothes parading in one of the military barracks in Omdurman. Nabil Abdullah, Sudan's military spokesperson, confirmed to VOA that thousands of volunteers have registered across Sudan and they are now undergoing some basic training before they are sent to fight. Abdullah says the youth have responded positively and they are registering in thousands across the country. He said most of citizens have been demanding such a move since the beginning of the war. Yusuf Izzat, political advisor to the RSF commander, condemned the call by Al-Burhan for young people to join the fight as a clear sign of defeat and said it is a crime. He told VOA the RSF is determined to continue fighting what he describes as elements of the Islamist government of ousted President Omar al-Bashir. Ezzat accuses the military of obstructing the establishment of a democratic civilian-led government in Sudan.
We try to solve this problem once and forever. Nobody will fight tribes, and we don't want tribes to be involved in this issue. This is a national war. It's about national agenda, about future of Sudan, but to solve the root causes of the conflict.
Regional and international mediation efforts have not been successful since fighting erupted on April 15th. Michael Atit for VOA News, Juba, South Sudan.
The leaders from Intergovernmental Authorities on Development, or IGAD, met in the Ethiopian capital Addis Ababa Monday to discuss efforts to address Sudan's nearly 3-month-long conflict. The meeting was chaired by Kenyan President William Ruto, who heads the IGAD group of four countries tasked with mediating in the Sudan conflict. And it was attended by regional and Western leaders, as well as representatives of Sudan's rapid support forces. Representatives of Sudan's army did not attend the meeting. Sudan's foreign ministry said Monday it sent a delegation to Addis Ababa, but was disappointed that President Ruto was still leading the country's task with ending the conflict in Sudan. The Sudanese leader, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, wanted South Sudanese President Salva Kiir to lead the efforts aimed at ending the violence in Sudan. Nabil Biagio reached Suleiman Baldo, the director of Sudan Transparency and Policy Tracker, to discuss these developments.
The quartet at the IGAD called the four heads of state of Kenya, Ethiopia, Djibouti, and South Sudan, who are supposed to be the facilitators for direct talks with the head of the Sudan Armed Forces and the rapid support forces to end the war and introduce very badly needed humanitarian intervention. In a way, a continuation of the role of the IGAD in mediating conflicts in the region. IGAD was the main mediator for the Sudan Comprehensive Peace Agreement of 2005. However, this time, Khartoum has adamantly insisted that the head of the team of the four heads of state should not be Kenya, accusing the Kenyan president of being supportive or sympathetic to the rapid support forces with no evidence of any concrete relationships or influence between the the Sudan rapid support forces and the Kenyan authorities. In my sense, Sudan is trying to steer the head of the four head of state team to South Sudan, where it's more comfortable in dealing with President Salva Kiir, who they believe, the Sudan Armed Forces Command believe they can, better direct and control, given the historic relationships between the SAF and the South Sudanese leadership.
And as you just mentioned, the composition of the team seems to be problematic. How do we overcome this sticking point of Khartoum, the army rejecting the chairmanship of William Ruto, the Kenyan president, and opting for the South Sudanese president? How can this sticking point be overcome?
Clearly, the Sudan Armed Forces want to choose and pick its own mediators to advance its own cause. And you don't do that when you are, basically involved in such massive destruction of your own country, as President Ruto has objectively criticized the belligerents, from the onset of this war. And therefore, I think that, the Sudanese army is seeking to prevail militarily on the ground before engaging in any talks that in that case would be one of surrender of the rapid support forces. And therefore, that's why I believe they are blocking the IGAD role in mediating a solution for the war in Sudan. And they have in the past walked away from the Jeddah talks, which for the moment only have the ambition of realizing a sustainable ceasefire on the ground and humanitarian intervention. Even that, the Sudanese army delegation to Jeddah suspended its participation in the talks earlier in June, leading to the adjournment of that mediation platform by the U.S. and the Saudi facilitators. And therefore, the government of Sudan is acting as if it's at this time it's not interested peace talks with the rapid support forces in view of ending the conflict, or it prefers that such mediation comes from countries and international regional leaders it can trust.
United States Assistant Secretary for African Affairs Molefi is reportedly in Addis this Monday and Tuesday to rally mediation efforts. I know she has already been involved in the mediation efforts together with the Saudis through the Jeddah mediation process, which failed and was suspended. What can she do differently, working with IGAD leaders and other regional leaders to achieve better results?
I think what the U.S. is seeking in these meetings by Assistant Secretary Molefi is to coordinate efforts with the regional organizations.
That was Suleiman Baldo, Director of Sudan Transparency and Policy Tracker. He spoke with Nabil Biagio this past hour from the U.S. state of New Jersey. That's all we prepared for you this Monday, July 10th. We now leave you with Mawa and the song Mata Kore. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. Don't forget to visit voaafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you missed this program, go to voaafrica.com/South Sudan. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer Bob Bass, we wish you a good evening. Remember to join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Dunia de fogo wajagelba, dunia de fogo suata, lakini.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United Nations peacekeeping mission in South Sudan continues to play an important role in protecting civilians and aid workers, acknowledged alternate representative for special political affairs, Ambassador Robert Wood, in recent remarks to the UN Security Council. At the same time, he expressed grave alarm over the rise of violence against civilians in South Sudan, where killings of civilians increased by 79%. Ambassador Wood reiterated the United States' view that South Sudan's transitional leaders bear responsibility to end the violence and hold perpetrators accountable.
We remind the transitional government of South Sudan that it has not upheld its primary responsibility to protect the civilians of South Sudan. If the transitional government wishes to achieve a successful transition to a permanent government, then it is imperative that it take responsibility to protect civilians and create a secure and stable electoral environment.
The year 2023 will mark a critical period for South Sudanese leaders to uphold their commitments on implementing benchmarks of the peace agreement. Transitional leaders must first expand civic space and create conditions under which all political parties, civil society, internally displaced persons, and South Sudanese citizens will have equal inclusion in the peace process that will shape South Sudan's future, declared Ambassador Wood.
We call upon the transitional government to act now to show the political will to create such conditions, including by ensuring that South Sudanese men and women can freely express their political views without fear of arrest.
The transitional government reported $1.6 billion in oil revenue last year, yet continues to fail to allocate those resources to address the humanitarian needs of its population, warned Ambassador Wood.
We urgently call on South Sudanese officials to dedicate more of its oil revenue to addressing the crisis and allow and facilitate the safe access and delivery of humanitarian assistance in South Sudan. We also condemn the killings of five humanitarian aid workers since the beginning of the year and call on the government to fully support humanitarian access and protect humanitarian aid personnel working tirelessly to deliver aid to South Sudanese people.
The United States remains committed to the cause of peace and to the people of South Sudan.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.